Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. And I'm alongside, as always,
me, Casey Clapp.
Yeah, boy.
The other host, the host with the coffee, the host with the kombucha, the host with a host of things to say today, Alex.
Wow.
Good New Year.
Good New Year to you, my friend. You're the host with a host of things to say. I'm the host with a host of problems.
Well, I guess if we just put those together, we come out equal.
I think so. In the way that Jesus was the King of Kings, you and I are the hosts of hosts.
Yes, in that same exact way.
Yeah.
You know what? Honestly, that metaphor, very well said.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, honestly, really appreciate it.
John Lennon did it first.
What? Oh, dang it. He does everything first.
Yeah. Casey.
Alex.
This is the very first episode of our new Unseasoned.
The Unseasoned. How does it feel, everyone out there?
Oh.
That's a great response.
The voices of millions cry out.
Yeah, but in positive cries. You know, when someone's not crying like bawling, but like crying like out.
Like an exclamation.
Ah! Yeah.
Yeah.
But on a good way, you know, like, yeah!
On a mountainside.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
A rainstorm.
Exalting us, hosts of hosts.
Sure.
Yeah.
The hosts of hosts.
It's getting very biblical all of a sudden.
Hoping this sticks.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously.
Yes, Casey. So to inform anybody who doesn't know, last year, 2021.
That's right.
It's the first year of our podcast. We did 4 seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Much as you might do on a television show.
Yeah, or in a fashion industry.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, of course, the root of it was Mother Nature has 4 seasons herself.
That's really where we ultimately come back down to every time.
So we did, you know, we did our first season. We did our world tour.
Second season, world tour.
Third season, classic, where we just did it was just our way of doing another season one.
Yeah, exactly.
And then season 4, of course, plant-based diet.
Edible. I love that name.
But now we are done with seasons.
Exactly. I don't know, Alex. I feel a little bit like sort of, you know, there's a yoke that's been thrown off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, now the structure is completely, you can play out there. You know, we can do anything.
That's right. We're going to do some mini series, like 3 or 4 episodes on a certain thing. We'll do theme months.
Yep. We're going to have a musical, probably.
I would love that.
Yeah.
We'll have 2-parters, you know. We can do anything now, Casey.
Might have a couple single parters. In there?
Yeah, some just like this one, just a standalone.
Standalone. It doesn't need anybody next to it. Its roots hold itself up.
That's right. And I think it's apt that, and I'm just putting this together, that we're doing no more seasons because as climate change ravages the world, there will be no more seasons.
Oregon is slowly becoming a tropical climate with no seasonal change.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably accurate.
So here we are setting the trend.
Yeah, exactly. We're just getting ahead of the curve. You know, we want to be caught behind, you know?
Yeah. Well, Casey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well, Alex.
Thanks.
This is exciting that we're starting with this tree also in New Year's, I just have to say.
Yes. Let's get right into it, man.
All right. Well, actually, I mean, we do have one thing we want to do before.
Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry.
That's totally all right. A lot has changed. I'm currently living in a yurt.
That's right.
With my partner, Hannah. It is a delight so far. But we've changed addresses. So we a lot of stuff every now and then, people are like, hey, we want to send you something. So we get it. During when it was all at an address that was somehow related to me, we always ended up getting, like, every now and then some things. At the end of the last season, we got a bunch of cones that I did an unboxing on Instagram.
That's right.
We've got mugs that we've showed off. We got a table. We got all sorts of stuff from our good friends out there, you listeners. And in our little intern period here, while we were moving some things around and making some cool changes, our friend Nick, at Fertile Frank is his at, he sent us some things because he heard that we were, like, talking about maple syrup, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, you know, you can get syrup from other trees. And we're like, yeah, we actually totally did know that. We wanted to get some from all these things. But I think when we did the maple season, mm-hmm. the maple episode.
The sugar maple.
The sugar maple.
The sugar maple.
But we were supposed to get all sorts of different things, weren't we? We were going to get, like, birch syrup.
Yeah, that was, and all these other things.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but it was seasonal and it just didn't work out. You know, at the time, our budget was less than a shoestring. And now it's just approximately half a shoestring. Uh-huh. And so Nick graciously sent us free syrup from one black walnut.
Yes, we have here a, what would you call it? It's not a jar.
It looks like a maple syrup jar, like the standard kind you'd get from, like, you know, at the store, but not the maple syrup that is, like, maple flavored syrup. No.
Well, in this jugule, I have black walnut syrup, and it says sweet and natural from Linwood, Kansas.
Exactly. The flavor of the Midwest, as Nick put it.
That's right. It says chill after opening. It's 8 fluid ounces of the stuff. Casey, we, as is now tradition, because we've done it twice, on our sugar maple episode, we drank a shot of syrup and we toasted it to the trees.
Yep. We're going to do the same thing, but we're going to toast it to the unseasoned, next season, you had another name for it, didn't you?
My idea was calling it completely arbitrary Year 2.
That's right, Year 2, off of some obscure television show that I didn't know.
It was a Batman comic.
That's right, sorry.
About his second year as Batman.
God, well, sorry.
Which I believe is what the new Batman movie is kind of based on.
That's right, I think I heard that as well, from you, in fact.
But there you go.
There you are.
I'm not a Batman person. I'm not even a comic book person to quell any... Anyway, Casey, we drink this black walnut syrup to you, to me, and to the trees.
And to the trees. To you, Alex.
Cheers.
To you, everyone. Thank you, Nick. Wow. Zing.
Ooh.
Straight to the kisser. That was delicious.
You know, I think I said this last time, drinking a shot of syrup is unpleasant.
I disagree.
But
I just disagree.
It tastes very good. It's certainly a lot more tolerable drinking in that way than the maple syrup.
You think so?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, yeah. This is a much more... It's not as sweet.
No.
It's a little zingier. It's a little more like a sugary. I think molasses was described as it one time.
It tastes a little woody to me. Like, it tastes like smoked almost.
Yeah, I can get that a little bit.
It's pleasant.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Great taste.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Nick,
for sending us that.
Yeah, we're going to shout out. Everyone go get maple syrup from Nick.
Casey.
Alex.
This week, we are talking about... A tree that I know almost nothing about. In fact, when you told me the name, I thought, okay.
He got that wrong.
Mm-hmm. I just didn't know what was special about it.
Oh.
But I think we're finding out today. We're talking about the Japanese black pine.
That is exactly right. Pinus thunbergii.
Thunbergii.
Yeah, do you know Thunberg? I think actually they might pronounce it Thunberg.
Is it German?
Swedish. It is... Named after Carl Peter Thunberg.
Okay.
Or Thunberg if you're from the United States of America.
A Swede...
can't pronounce anything.
A Swede tree man?
Yeah. So he's a Swedish botanist and naturalist, and he ended up going out and he did all sorts of stuff. I think he actually spent quite a bit of time in Japan, so he had ended up... I think he published a bunch of floras of different parts of the world.
Mm. Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode... That you and I, how about this?
Oh.
You and I are taking an afternoon stroll through a bonsai nursery.
Oh, Alex.
Is the topic of today's tree.
Uh-huh.
And I ask you, please, Casey, let's ID this tree.
Yes. So the big thing about this is it's a pine tree, 100% the normal pine. In fact, it's in the Pinus subgenre of Pinus.
So
it's
wow.
The type species of the type species of the type species.
Kind of an alpha male pine.
Yeah, exactly. Or just like a
clean bloodline.
Yeah, it's a standard clean pedigree all the way through. It's a pine tree. It's a pine tree's pine tree, I'd say.
Wow, okay.
And the thing about it, it's got these little needles. They're maybe about 4 inches long on average. They're in bundles of two, and their bundles of two are closely spaced, and they kind of twist a little bit, but they don't really go too wide. They kind of stay a little bit shut. And because of that, they kind of give all of their twigs kind of a weird kind of tufted look where everything's like pointed away and down.
Okay.
A little bit. So it just looks like the hair on every twig is staying straight up.
Yeah.
Straight up. And then every now and then when you get them really tightly spaced, they kind of grow more straight out. So if you're walking through a bonsai showroom or museum, then you can find a lot of these Japanese black pines growing in these like little bunched kind of ways, but they're usually not very straight up. So they're not like a ponderosa or a lodgepole pine where they just go whoosh and have a perfectly straight canopy and they are big dominant trees. They tend to grow really windswept or kind of curved off on the side of a rock, on the side of a mountain, you know, next to the ocean. They can grow almost down into the sand. Like, that's how ocean-born these are a lot of times.
You know what they sort of, well, like a shore pine?
Exactly. Really similar.
I hope I'm not profiling here, but to me, it looks a bit like a Japanese maple, but they're like the pine version.
Interesting. That's a fun way to think about this.
Yeah, it's twisty, and also, I'm seeing a lot of a lot of Japanese black pines here in Google Images,
yeah,
that have sort of the same form factor where they have those big platelets of foliage.
Yes, we're going to get to that. That is a specific style of pruning.
Okay.
Both used on the Japanese maple and on the Japanese pine.
That's what I thought, maybe.
Yeah, as well as many other species, but we'll get to that in a little while.
Okay.
But let's see, what else do we got here about this tree? So the big ones will have this really cool bark that specifically will have these long longitudinal cracks that come up, but they also kind of look like they peel a little bit, but in kind of bigger plates.
Yeah.
So what's cool about it is they have kind of a really reddish, orangish underbark. And that underbark, like say on a ponderosa pine, you just pop off a couple of those little puzzle pieces and the underbark is exposed. You get that bright red, bright orange kind of color, right?
Can I interrupt you for 2 seconds to say something?
Yes.
I've been meaning to say it for months.
Go for it.
We've gotten so much mail about this.
What?
And I want to say it and then I want to immediately move on.
Okay.
I don't want any reaction or topic or discussion. The ponderosa pine smells like vanilla. Casey, please continue.
I won't say it. Dang thing. Moving on, Alex.
So this black pine, this Japanese black pine bark, I would categorize this, we have a new category. We have utility bark, but I would say this is like alligator skin bark.
Yes. Well, okay. So I would say there's other bark it would be like the definition of that category.
Uh-huh.
So I think this is fair, but I would put this as a hybrid between alligator skin and like shaggy. There's like a aesthetic I'm thinking of, like imagine like some royalty from like Cairo in like, you know, the second century AD.
Okay.
And they have like these shimmery plates all over this gorgeous long dress.
Oh, okay.
And these plates kind of pop out, like each one sewn individually onto this garment. And then you walk, but then let's say, I don't know, it gets hot. They kind of bend up a little bit. Like they just kind of look like a bunch of little bits of shag coming off this like really elegant thing.
Interesting.
That's what I see with this bark.
How random, and a very good imagery.
I hope so. I mean, if someone's designing this, you know, as a costume, send me a picture because I want to see it. Like,
yeah.
Like specifically, I want to see all the bark costumes that come out this year.
Halloween is only a short 11 months away.
just a smidge away. Well, it turns out that this bark is really similar to the Japanese red pine.
Okay.
The biggest difference between the Japanese red pine and this is that the Japanese red pine mind, does not generally get long fissures that are going up longitudinally. Mm. They kind of stay in these little plates, and they don't turn, or they don't have these big long lines that you can see.
Okay, so the black pine, this Japanese black pine,
yeah,
longer streaks in the bark.
Yes, correct.
Okay,
and then the. They also have the same orange underneath with this really light brown gray on the outside. When you touch it, it's just full of sensation. Like all these little bits, but they're not really hard. So when you touch it, like the little plates can kind of bend, you know, you just push them a little bit. You can kind of flip them and pull them off. Like they're not super intense or anything like that.
Interesting.
And then of course, as a tree grows up, it does not keep that straight, perfect canopy. As the bark gets younger, it becomes more gray and more kind of normal looking, like utility kind of bark.
So younger bark is utility?
Yeah, younger okay. on younger stems or on younger trees at the base.
And then it finds its purpose in its 20s.
Exactly. It becomes an alligator.
Yeah.
Yeah, trees become alligators.
Wow, you heard it here first.
Write that down, people. Well, the biggest thing to note about these trees, though, is that as they grow up, their new shoots have these really long candles. So the candles in pine trees are what they call the buds. So the terminal buds are called candles.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, that's fun.
And if you look at, the picture I'm looking at is actually from conifers.org, the gymnosperm database.
Oh, wow.
Highly recommend perusing everything about this website. And they have a specific entry on Pinus thunbergii, and they show the foliage, including elongated shoots, is the picture that I'm looking at. And they have like these white, shaggy kind of like, it almost looks like, you know, as a mushroom grows up and it has like almost white hairs on the stem that kind of just come off, like,
yeah,
just kind of like that. It looks like that. Like it almost looks like webs from a spider,
yes,
kind of covering the whole top.
That was what I was going to say. It looks like is like a spider kind of just spindled around it a little bit.
Yeah, it just kind of hung out, but then kind of left. Didn't really do much, but left its mark.
A little gossamer, yeah, covered.
Exactly. That's exact perfect definition. So anyway, these trees are like these gorgeous trees. They can get pretty huge if you leave them in like the perfect situation. But I love when they describe things on like in old-fashioned ways, because they always use like really specific terms, like we would say, you know, this is a fair site or a good site. They're like, you know, on poor sites. And whenever I read this from like someone citing it in like 1750,
yeah,
I always assume they mean like poor sites, not in like, no, it's just like ecologically, it's a really rough place. Maybe it's dry, maybe it's rocky, it doesn't have a whole lot of nutrients or water.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever I hear from someone like that, I always imagine it's like, oh, it grows in poor neighborhoods.
Oh.
Like, I don't know why, but I just always think that. I'm like, I just think that they're... It always makes me laugh the way I interpret it whenever I hear it.
This is a poverty-stricken tree.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, this tree, it's like a tree grows in Brooklyn. She's like, oh, yeah, you can tell the poor places because this tree grows here. So I think it's kind of like the same thing here.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah, so that's my own little nuance just to add to it. So just so you guys know.
And Casey, can we talk about, and I say this quite literally, this pine cone?
Oh, we absolutely can. I love it. And hey, good use of the term pine cone, I have to admit.
Thank you. And just for anybody who's brand new to the podcast or brand new to trees, Casey and I have this ongoing campaign, this crusade, if you will.
I think I would.
It's not annoying, though. To get people to stop using pine cone as an umbrella term,
yeah,
for cones on trees.
It's not generic.
Because there are pine cones from pine trees. There are also hemlock cones from hemlock trees.
Exactly.
There are fir cones from fir trees. There are cedar
Thank
cones
you.
From cedar trees. There are spruce cones from spruce trees, Casey. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Alex. I couldn't have. It's a cone generally from a conifer.
Yes.
And there are cones on non-evergreen. So welcome to everyone, the second season where everything we do is pedantic.
That's right.
this is our first series we're going to do. It's just pedantic trees.
Yes.
Well, yes, we can talk about this pine cone very wonderful. Specifically from a pine tree from the genus Pinus. They are adorable. They're very small. They only get maybe about 3 or 4 inches long at most. Usually they're a little bit shorter.
Mm.
And they have like what I would call a classic like black pine, where they're almost like the classic cone you could ever think of.
Yeah.
And what makes them classic to me is they, of course, as a pine family species, They have a central axis with spirally arranged cone scales coming off of it.
Hell yeah.
The cone scales are imbricate, which means that they overlap each other. So have you ever seen like a flower, like a rosebud? And when it's closed, you just see like this perfect little sphere. Then as it starts to open, it looks like literally there's a bunch of bits that are overlapping each other. And then when they expand, they fold out.
Yes.
That is what an imbricate style thing is, where each one of those cone scales or petals, or in this case, bud scales, they overlap each other. And then when they open up, they're all separated on their own sort of area.
Are most cones not umbricate?
No. For instance, the peltate cone scales of a lot of things in the cypress family. So any of the cypress, true cypresses, or anything in those families, most things in those families, I should say, that family, they have scales that come out oppositely arranged, look like they're, and peltate means shield-like, and that essentially means that they come out from a central thing, go out left and right, and are just out there like a shield would be held up. And so they don't overlap at all. They just close right next to each other. And then when they dry out, they open up. But it's more like a door opening where you have, or like, what am I thinking? Like a open sesame kind of door where it just goes goo-goo, straight open.
Like a garage door.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Alex. I'm like, what kind of door is this? I'm moving my hands up and down. Like, there's so many kinds of doors.
Okay, so but this is not unique among pine cones, is it?
No.
Or fir cones?
Certainly not. No, this is just a classic pine cone look. Where you like, if you have a kid go out and be like, what's this? And I'm like, well, it's a pine cone. This is the definition that is in their brain.
For sure.
And so when you look at the side of it, they have these little like almost diamond-shaped scales that are exposed. Then when they open up, those all kind of separate out and bend up a little bit. They have two seeds on each scale. And then on the bottom, if you look at the bottom, or in this case, maybe the top of the cone, where it actually connects, that little peduncle connects to the branch, you take a look at that bottom part, and it's not very spirally looking. It certainly is spirally arranged, but when you look at the bottom of it, it just looks like a mess of little cones coming out, or little cone scales popping out. But you cannot discern a very specific spiral pattern in it. Now, there is another black pine called the Austrian black pine, Pinus nigra. Gets confused with this tree a lot.
Interesting.
And if you look at the bottom of Pinus nigra, it has that perfect little spiral.
Oh.
Yeah. So that is like the big like difference if you're looking between these two cones. The Pinus thunbergi, a little bit smaller, a little bit more chaos.
Okay.
Whereas Pinus nigra, a little bit bigger, a little less chaos.
I have a few words to say about this Japanese black pine cone.
All right.
I love it.
1, 2, 3, 4 words. It's incredible. I love it. It's only 3. Shoot. How did I miscount that?
I don't know.
1, 2, 3, and then I was like, 4. There we go. Okay, cool.
I love it. And I won't give my, obviously we give our final thoughts at the end of the episode, but I will say,
yeah,
the Japanese black pine cone gets Croson's stump of approval.
Wow. Just like that.
I love how it looks. It looks like a classic pine cone,
yeah,
but it also looks so soft and round.
Interesting.
Like even these open ones in the sides of the scales, Casey, like the outward facing part of the scale.
Yeah.
The umbo.
Yeah. 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 That's right.
Umbra.
Umbo. Yeah.
Umbo. Is like kind of rounded.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it looks a lot like a walnut to me.
A walnut.
Yeah, it's got kind of a walnut meat. The meat, the nut
inside the actual the seed. Yeah. That. Interesting. I'm gonna have to use my imagination to see that.
And I will say, well, you know, we look at the world in different ways. And I will say, if anybody has a Japanese black pine cone that they don't want, I will please send that to me.
Yeah, add us.
This is the first cone I've seen in a while that I thought, wow, I'd love to have one of those in my small but growing collection.
Hey, yeah, me too. In fact, I think I do, but I've actually had a lot of like ID crisis lately. Like I've had cones that have been like, oh yeah, I know what this cone is. And I've had it for a long time. I identified it like 5 or 6 years ago. And then when I actually like categorized everything, I was like, wow, am I sure?
Wow.
I don't remember exactly where I got this cone. And then I kind of panicked and I'm like, well, if I can't identify it for sure, I don't have it. So, question mark. for me.
This is the center of your character arc. This is your midlife crisis.
This is my midlife crisis. Yeah.
This is your meeting with the goddess.
I look at all of my cones and I'm just like, I don't know any of you.
Well, Casey,
it's terrifying.
We're going to get to know the Japanese black pine a lot more after this quick break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. The Unseasoned. Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work. You know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods. And I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted. Even though I love those people and enjoy being around them, but therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar
and that time rolls around and you think, I got to drive all the way across town. I am not going to go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary, the unseasoned Japanese black pine.
Mm-hmm.
And today, Casey, I heard tell through the grapevine.
Oh.
Through the black pine. That you and I are going to be talking about what I traditionally would have called bonsai.
Yeah.
But what Allie Ward taught me is called bonsai.
Yes. Yep. That's true. That's fair. I know bonsai. I don't know.
Casey just rolled his eyes.
I did. You know why? I listened to a Radiolab a couple weeks ago, and they talked about Neanderthals. And apparently, some people say Neanderthal.
Oh.
Just the same as some people say, let this cheese mature. Other people say, oh, let that cheese mature. You know, it's like, okay, if I say mature, I feel like a normal person.
Yeah.
When I say mature, I feel like a little bit of a, I think the term they use is icky. And I don't think icky is the right word for me. I feel more like a little uppity.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
It's like, oh, look at the Neanderthals. It's like, shut up, douchebag.
There is a little bit of gatekeeping, I think, when people use those terms. Or like, I've also heard, I just had it. Like a lot of stuff in the culinary world too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
because a lot of that is based in French.
You know? So you like go back and forth, and I always have trouble with that. Like sometimes when you hear someone speaking, like clearly they are just speaking English from America, United States of America, and then they say something with like a Spanish accent, and they just put on this hard Spanish accent, and they come back, and it's like, why that sounded really strange.
Well, I would say if a person is like Mexican,
sure.
When they speak Spanish,
I guess that's true.
When they say a single word of Spanish, they use their Mexican accent. I think that's fair.
I think that is fair. I don't know. Just sometimes, I don't know. Maybe if they're just like a very, I don't know. I have thoughts on this. I don't know where I land. All that to say, whenever I say bonsai, I feel like a little bit of an elitist.
Sure.
Is that bad?
No.
Okay. So I just want to call it bonsai because that maybe that's just the Americanized version of the word in American English.
And you are an American who speaks English.
Yeah, poorly many times, but I try my best.
I my favorite example of this is when Italian chefs on the Food Network say, and then we're gonna take some fresh mozzarella.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. I feel like I had someone in college do something like that once, and I had a visceral reaction to it. I was like, I hate you.
It is suddenly sort of embarrassing. I don't know.
So yeah, then if you don't get embarrassed, then I'm just a little bit like, I don't even want to talk to you. You're gonna say that I have to pronounce something so differently.
Anyway.
So, someone, you know, I'm going to make an artistic choice and say bonsai. I'm saying that incorrectly, it's because I took license to do so as a tree professional.
I will join you in this, and I will be calling it bonsai.
All right. Thank you, Alex.
You're welcome.
And if Allie Ward has to say something, fine. Make sure you do it in a public place.
Uh-huh.
Make sure as many people as you see or as you can see it, and we'll have you on the show, and we can talk about it.
Oh, we would just hate for Allie Ward to call us out. Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics.
Yeah, exactly. And also, if Tobin Mitnick calls me out, too, I'm going to be upset. Or you. Anyway, let's move on.
How about Alexis? You know, Black Forager
to say
our name and tag us just once.
You know what? Just one time.
We don't think she has the guts. Why don't you prove us wrong?
Anyway, bonsai is the subject of today's conversation.
Hell yeah.
Get your books, turn to page 12.
Oh, the Casey.
Art of Bonsai.
Yes, that book. It's a gorgeous book. Wow.
It is, yeah. This is actually, I got this in Japan at a bonsai museum.
No kidding.
In 2017 or 18?
Is it in English?
It is English. So this one is in English. This is the English book by DK Publishing. I believe the writer of this, let me find his name real fast.
I see you've got some signatures on the front page.
I do. Peter Warren wrote this book. DK published it. And this is Kiro Kobayashi is who did this. And this is in May of 2018. And I went to a bonsai museum in Tokyo. And I had to find my way down several different small bus lines. This weird, not in the center of town kind of place.
Yeah.
And it was essentially a nursery kind of, and then a display garden at the same time.
Wow.
It was really beautiful. He had several different apprentices that were there, and they were all basically working to learn how to be, bonsai masters at some
point. Wow, cool.
And so I just walked in. I don't speak Japanese, and there turns out there was a bunch of other people there. There was a German kid who's doing this, and there's a picture half a museum where there's just a bunch of, trees out there just to look at in the shape of a nursery. So you're like, I think all these are for sale. And then I think actually the guy, someone asked, the tour guide gave me, he said, well, I think what my boss would say is everything here is for sale for the right price.
I see.
And so it was the 1,000-year-old trees in these little pots, actually big pots. And so this this German kid is one of these millions of minions that he had that were just clipping, the tiniest little scissors. Mm. And you just walk around, and if you just were really quiet, you could just hear little cutter ants all over the place, just doing a million different trimmings on all these little trees. And so he came by, and it was almost like, oh, okay, I got to do this because I'm the only one here who speaks English. And he was a German who gave me this fun little tour around, but it was very much hey, I do this all the time. It's a part of the internship or something like that.
Huh.
But it was funny. There's also apparently he expects a lot of the apprentice.
Of course. It's,
you go there and you do nothing but bonsai.
Wow.
You don't go out. You don't hang out. You sleep. You get up. You do bonsai. And this one guy was like, I want my money back. I want to leave. And they're like, you can't. It was almost like the people there who were running it were like, we don't understand what you mean. What do you mean leave? What? And there was this big miscommunication about this apprentice who was like, I did not expect this. I want to be able to leave.
He wanted out.
Yeah. And they're like, what? We don't, you can't leave. You paid what? And it was very much, they were all confused. But there's a lot of mistranslations happening. I just kept walking and looked at the trees.
And they said all in unison, life is bonsai. Bonsai is life.
Yeah, and then they all prayed to the trees.
Yeah.
My kind of people, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, yeah, so I got this book, and so this is called Bonsai, Technique, Style, Display Ideas.
Cool.
And it gives a little history about what bonsai is. I shall regale you, Alex. Are you ready?
Wonderful. Yes, please.
All right, perfect. Bonsai is essentially the Japanese variety of a tradition started in China many, many years ago. And in China, it had a name that it's changed a little bit, but at the time, it was the first records were in the Han Dynasty in China that came out of people planting trees in pots, making these little landscape things.
Yeah.
And they called it Penjing, or I've heard another one, Penjai, I think is what you'd pronounce it as, something similar to that. But it's essentially, initially started from these Buddhist monks, most likely coming over from India. And they came over and they would just bring little trees in pots with them, just as you have houseplants all around you.
Yeah.
So maybe you're like, oh, I'm just going to take this little fig tree with me from here to here because I'm a Buddhist and the Buddha was underneath a fig tree. So I'm going to bring this as a religious kind of token. You know? Maybe that was it. There's not really a lot of 100%, no one really knows exactly how it developed, but that's when they're pretty sure.
Okay.
So then fast forward a couple hundred years and you're in the Song or the Song Dynasty in China, and it's like a massively prosperous time for them. They invented paper money. They invented gunpowder, like rudders on ships. They invented that for, you know, at least their ships. So you started getting these like really fantastic like cultural advances in China. When you get that kind of thing, of course, you get the luxury that comes with it. So I am a king and I am just like, you know, ready to go, an emperor at the time. And they're just like, I am the coolest. We're the best. I'm going to pay $1 million to have somebody do this random thing because I can afford it. Why not? And what they started to do is make little miniature landscapes in like big, not pots in a strict sense, but like a big gigantic planter bed or, you know, a courtyard or something like that.
Okay.
And they would miniaturize all of the trees and plants. And one of these emperors, he was like, I want this to look like all of my empire.
Oh.
So we had trees from all over the empire brought in and planted and kept miniature.
Wow.
So how do you keep plants miniature? You're going to have a dedicated horticulturalist to do this. So they started planting them, and in over time, you know, as China and or Chinese and Japanese and Korean and Taiwan, like all these different cultures kind of started to intersect and move around, whether by conquest or, you know, literal monks just kind of going around talking about Confucianism and Shintoism and all these other different little ideas and sort of that cultural exchange that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started bringing around these trees. And then you get the Japanese style starts to come in because they say, oh, I want to plant my trees in these little pots and bring them around and then start training them and learning how to take care of these things.
Mm.
And then you get other styles in Vietnam. There's one that developed. And that style essentially was a miniature landscape, like take, you know, a gigantic island, take all the plants that are on that and then recreate it on a tiny island that you've man-made inside a little pond or something inside a garden.
It makes sense to me that this originated with an emperor because it's sort of an like that specific idea, him recreating his empire in a small where he can like look at it all. Is sort of like it's very egotistical, don't you think?
Yeah. And that's kind of that's exactly what had happened. Like, I'm so rich, I'm so fancy, I can afford to like spend
fuck
every
around.
Waking moment fucking around with this tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of the beginnings of where, you know, where it began.
Sure, a peasant would look at that and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I'm like, is this to make fruit? Or like, what's the point?
Yeah.
But the cultures there are also different where they would be like, wow, that's really beautiful. Like they also, it was an artistic, in cultural, horticultural thing, just the same way as a monk in some monastery in Japan or China would plant a tree and like take care of that tree.
Sure.
Like nobody's business until it's like 1,000 years old. Like one of the oldest Japanese cherries or oldest Japanese maples or ginkgo or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you'd have those like those people dedicated to it. They'd also do other things probably.
Yeah. Right? I by that peasant remark, I think I just meant like in any empire, there are people suffering at the bottom who would look at that and be like, I hate you. I don't even have anything to eat.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have like a playground.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. And it was very specifically the elite class. They call out monks, scholars, and artists took a slightly different path during the Edo period and started to really like focus on this, but then taking it to religious ways.
I see.
So when you get down to it, what exactly is bonsai? It's kind of a newer term for, you know, this whole idea, but it's literally growing a tree in a pot.
Sure.
That's it, or plant in a pot is what it comes down to, where you have bon meaning pot and zai meaning plant.
Thank you. I was just Googling that.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Potted plant.
That's what it comes down to.
All right.
So you got a potted plant, but then they call out a specific difference between a potted plant, like what we have surrounding us right now, and a bonsai tree. So what exactly is the difference between the two? Why can you not just have, there's right there. That's a coffee tree. It's in a pot. Boom. Bonsai.
Well, this is very interesting. Well, as we recently discussed in a Patreon episode, you don't consider coffee to be a tree.
Yeah, right.
It's a shrub.
Right.
So is the difference the fact that they are trees versus plants?
Well,
or other, I mean, non-tree plants?
Isn't that the funny thing, Alex? They can make a bonsai, in quotes, a little tree in a pot or a plant in a pot that would meet the requirements of a bonsai. And if you look up pictures, which, hold on, Alex, let me just toss you this book here.
Oh, right? A second book.
Now, hold this one and then flip it around. There you go. It opens opposite.
We're reading from right to left here.
Yeah, exactly. And this is from the same artist, but this is his book that he signed for me, and I think he kind of assumed that I wanted it signed, which is great. I mean, of course I would take it, but he's just like, here, go pick out two books that you want, and then I'll sign them both. And I was like, okay, sounds good.
Wow.
Got a little tea tour. I think I was the only one who paid for a tour that day, so I got like all the pulls.
The star treatment.
Yeah, everything came out. And so
the interns are running around. Casey Clapp is here.
Yeah, oh my God.
From Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics.
You know it. It's translated into several languages. but you can see there, like, the reason I'm showing you this, and then we'll show some pictures of bonsai. And of course, anyone out there can look it up and see a bonsai tree is very distinct. It's very much not a just simply, one does not simply plant a potted tree and call it a bonsai. Did
Damn
I say that
straight.
Right?
Yes, you did.
God, I'm good at memes. And so what it takes to do this is you have to keep the trees alive and looking healthy as they can possibly be. Yeah. But the thing with trees is that they do not want to be in a little tiny pot bound.
Well, this is my question.
Yeah.
I'm cheating a bit because I remember you saying that bonsai.
Hey, your cones are your own, Alex.
Is a little bit analogous to the tremendously awful practice of foot binding.
It is, yes. That is I think that is an apt metaphor. Not culturally, but just specifically, what is one, what is the other?
Yeah.
They match up really well.
Wow.
It's something that wants to get huge, that's being forced by you know, challenging situations to grow in a certain way that it is not naturally wanting to do.
Yeah.
So traditionally, you would go out and one of these masters would go out and find a tree growing on the side of a mountain. And remember how we said the Japanese black pine would be growing in like these really weird, constricted, and like not a straight up kind of way, but like on the side of a mountain. On the coast, getting battered by wind.
Windswept, yeah.
Exactly. So they would find these trees growing in rock crags that, you know, for whatever reason, seed landed there. It's just growing. It's doing everything in its power to not die because these trees are stupendously able to live. They just, they can grow anywhere. They can take salt conditions, dry conditions, wet conditions. They're just really, as long as it's within their temperature range, which is about a 6 for the USDA, so a little bit colder than Portland, probably. Okay. Southern Oregon gets really cold, and kind of Eastern Oregon.
This is Japanese black pine you're talking
about? Japanese black pine, yeah. So as long as you have that within, it's like sort of Southern Japan kind of range temperature-wise and climate-wise, the tree's going to be just fine. It'll grow almost anywhere. So they found, wow, this is a perfect tree to grow in this way because as bonsai, you're sticking it in a pot and you're constricting the roots. The roots of a tree want to grow out as far as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. They want to go down and find as much water as they can and get these massive amount of resources. So in a small little pot, which traditionally the pot would be proportional to the size of the tree, you got a 3-foot tall tree. It comes out 2 feet. You should probably have like a roughly 3 by 2, 5-foot square little pot.
Okay.
And that is so that the pot itself, you'll notice in all of those photos I just showed you, the pot itself is a proportional depth and width and size of the tree that's growing out of it.
Yes.
So if you're going to do that, you have to keep that tree really, really small. It can go down maybe 6 inches, maybe 8 inches of depth, which is horrendous for a tree. They want to go down 3 feet.
Right.
Then if it wants to grow out, it can only grow out 1 or 2 feet on either side before it hits a wall. Mm. And you're like, well, what is it going to do? What they do is they have to pull it out every single year, trim the roots of it, and actually cut the roots off, the new shoots. Stresses the tree out, of course, and then put it back in where it'll have enough nutrients, enough soil, but it has to start regrowing its roots. So you essentially keep this tree as a dwarf tree, as if it's growing in a rock crag all by itself, where it only gets a certain amount of water, it only has a certain amount of room to grow, and it can only stay really, really small.
Wow.
So they recreate those natural conditions that this tree would be growing in, or in the case of literally any other tree, because, spoiler for everyone, any tree can be a bonsai. It's just the technique of growing a tree in a pot. And it just so happens the black pine is like the creme de la creme. Our book over here describes it as the king of bonsai.
Wow.
And so it is. It's like foot binding. It's a little bit rough, but oh my God.
Are there... Well, I guess you just said any tree can be a bonsai.
Any tree can be a bonsai.
But are there deciduous bonsais?
There sure are, Alex.
Like, I could have a little... Now I'm getting excited. Yeah. I'm torn on this subject. Because you said it's like not a great practice for the tree.
Yeah.
But it is kind of an exciting, beautiful art form.
It is, and that's what makes it special. Like, that's what pulls it apart, right?
Yeah.
Because it is an art form.
Yeah. I could have a little Don Redwood.
You could. Well, you'd have to keep it outside, though, because you also are still mimicking the tree's natural climactic conditions.
Sure.
In fact, if you get on the internet right now and you Google Don Redwood bonsai, there are thousands of examples.
What about in my little apartment here?
You would want to get a tropical tree as a bonsai.
Could I get a banyan?
You absolutely could.
Wow.
Look up banyan tree or fig tree bonsai.
Well, now we're talking.
Yeah. All of a sudden, everyone's like, wait, what?
Wow. This is a little banyan.
Japanese holly. Chinese elm. Rocky Mountain juniper. European larch. Cotoneaster, which is a shrub, but they make it look like a little tree. Coastal redwood.
I will say, actually, I'm going to hold that for my final thoughts.
Ooh, okay, good. So let's see. So anyway, this is a cultural thing, this bonsai thing. And if you do it really well, you can keep the tree alive. And you're just basically, I don't want to give the trees too much, I don't want to give them too much agency in the idea that you're like hurting the tree.
Right.
I don't necessarily believe that trees react like that. And I don't mean it in a way that's like, trees aren't alive, trees don't feel. Okay, we're going to have that discussion some other time. I'll leave that to Peter Wallenben.
Okay.
Do you know who that is?
No.
Oh, it's a guy who wrote The Secret Life of Trees and that thing.
Okay.
Read the book. It's a fine book, but it's very much like trees can feel, trees can believe, trees love, trees have all these things. It's like, okay, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Trees aren't people. I'm sorry.
No, I still like to say trees are people, though, so I'm going to hold off my judgment on that.
We do a lot of characterizing humanizing of trees, but come on.
Yeah, in a fundamental way, they are not. It doesn't mean that they can't have some kind of agency in and of themselves. They just may not see it the same way as we do. Mm-hmm. If you cut off a person's arm, they're going to be like, bro, my arm. You cut it off. Now I'm behind, and I can no longer ever get to the same level. A tree does not do that. You cut an arm off of a tree, the tree's just like, meh, okay, meh.
Right.
Let's close it off. I'm going to grow like 6 new ones this year anyway because I don't care.
Yeah.
So if you have roots of a tree, you pull this tree out when it's dormant, you prune all the roots and you put it back in, and the tree starts growing again. The tree just kind of says, okay, what happened? Cool. Okay, we're going to cut this off. We're going to do our best. So the trees don't react in a way that's just like they're not crying out for help. They just respond and then they continue living however best they can.
They're non-judgmental to the things that happen to them.
Allegedly, that's as much as I believe, right?
Sure.
So in this case, though, that makes bonsai trees a product that is 100% dedicated to being in and around people. If you take people away from bonsai trees, they will die.
Yeah.
Every single one of them, other than maybe the banyan tree. Because that can put down a root and find something.
Oh, sure.
So if it can escape somehow its bondage, then it can live.
Wow.
Most of them cannot. So you start a bonsai tree. You must take care of that tree every single year, all the rest of its life. And I say its life because if you do it right, you will die. Pass that on to the next person. They will die. Pass it on to the next person. So on and so forth for as long as possible.
Mm.
There are trees that are 600 years old.
Wow.
There are trees that are 1,000 years
bonsai
old.
Bonsai trees?
Bonsai trees.
What the hell?
The people have started way back when it was like, you know, hey, this is a cool thing to do. We've only been doing it for 1,000 years, and I'm just going to start growing a tree.
Yeah.
They grow the tree. They aren't dealing with all the fancy fertilizers and things like this. They just got the knowledge passed down from someone. Your master dies and gives you his trees.
Wow.
You start taking his care of his trees, then so on and so forth. And now you have a tree that is in, it's a 600 or 700 year old pine tree growing in a pot that it is itself 400 years old.
Yeah.
That's how these things kind of work. And they just have these constant rotations of tradition that has been kept alive for, you know, 2,000 years now. So it's a really cool idea, but then the thing that develops over this 2,000 years, especially when you give sort of the Japanese artistry involved, is you develop these very specific techniques and very specific styles. I'll let you see this page, Alex.
Okay.
What do you see? Give us a description.
Well, from left to right, there are illustrations of bonsai trees. The one mm-hmm. in the upper left is a single stem.
Yep.
Is that a Japanese black pine?
These are all just, I would say you could probably call them Japanese black pines, yeah.
Okay. Then there's one that looks to be either one several-stemmed plant or a few different single
uh-huh.
stems.
Yeah.
And then there's one in a smaller pot, possibly, that looks like a smaller plant.
Yeah.
Am I looking for something specific here, Casey?
You are looking for the differences because these are all styles.
Oh.
And so all of these styles, you'll notice, I've seen a picture of a bonsai tree that looks just like that.
Yeah.
You were talking about the Japanese maple earlier where it has those same kinds of pads or like the cloud formation.
I see.
So that is all very specific designs that are developed through this Japanese kind of artistry.
Okay.
To do two things. One, to create an image where especially in the Chinese historic traditions, they would make them look like dragons.
Sure.
And this is all very like, you're making a tree look like a dragon. So
very
it's not
cool.
Like, okay, yes, I see the dragon. They're just like, no, see how it like, this is the tail, kind of comes up. It's kind of looking at constellations, you know, where you mimic it in a certain way and you say, this is what it looks like. And it's like, wow, yeah, okay, that's really beautiful. But it's also balanced. And then they like scarify and kill some of the bark. So you have like this dead stem that's coming up and it's just alive on one side. And you mimic the naturalist conditions to make a miniature tree that looks like it's 1,000 years old, big, gigantic tree.
I don't like it.
So if you were an ant, you wouldn't like it?
I don't like it. I don't think I like it.
You don't like it. Why not? Because you don't like the falseness of it?
I don't know. I have some final thoughts.
Yeah.
Casey, let's get on to our review of the Japanese black pine.
Yes, sir.
Here's how it works for anybody listening for the first time. Casey and I are going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. We're back to the OG, Case.
Oh, it feels good to be back, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Wow.
No more cone gimmicks.
No, I'm tired of cone gimmicks.
And no more cone antics either. Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
All right. Pinus thunbergia, Japanese black pine. I agree with this statement. This pine is the king of Japanese bonsai world.
Wow.
They call it dramatic.
Who said that?
I believe his name is Peter Warren.
Oh, the author of this book.
Yeah, I assume that's him.
And the name of the book again?
The name of the book, Bonsai.
Bonsai.
I think, and then it says technique, styles, display, ideas. I don't know if that's the thing.
Wonderful.
So, this tree, to me, exemplifies a tree being turned to art, no matter how it is. It also exemplifies to me a tree making itself art, because this tree did not become the king of bonsai because bonsai existed and they needed a king. This tree was found and they said, that's the perfect tree. I'm going to take that out of those rocks that I found on the side of this mountain. I'm going to put it into this pot and I'm going to keep it alive. That's what they did. So it's like these trees created the whole world, you know, of bonsai. And now that's not 100% true. What I'm saying right now is only 70% true. But it's my opinion that this tree basically is the archetype. And then we change things from that.
Okay.
We've also grown trees in bonsai that are, you know, 100% different. But we're not talking about those trees right
now.
No,
we're not.
We are talking about the Japanese black pine and how spectacular it is. Most specifically, I'm going to give this tree a 7.1 out of 10 golden cones of honor.
Okay.
My main reason for this is that it takes these conditions really well. It basically says, all right, sure. And it grows however you want it to grow. And you can keep it as a tiny little tree that's the most beautiful thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can let that tree grow up and get larger, and they will still manipulate the branches and turn it into these beautiful, they look like giant bonsai trees when they're really just the normal trees and they've just pruned them in such a way.
Just highly manicured.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But of course, because it is in this kind of artistic style, it's not highly manicured where it's like topiary, you know? Or like, oh, that tree's perfect, where you're kind of a little uncomfortable with its perfection.
Yeah.
These trees are perfect, and you look at it, and you're like, I just want to lay on you like you're a cloud.
Mm.
So I think these trees are spectacular for that reason. I think also they're spectacular because if you left them alone, they would do the same dang thing and make themselves into stunning, stunning bonsais growing out of the side of mountains. It's perfect. It's
not a bonsai.
Not a bonsai. A normal tree growing as a bonsai tree, just not in a pot.
I see.
Yeah.
Acai.
Wow. Just acai. A plant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think they're wonderful trees. I love their cones. I've seen them planted around a lot. I've identified them and been like, that's the coolest tree.
Yeah.
And it's a tree that you have probably seen many times. Other people have seen, I'm sure, many times, but you just don't know it because it's like, oh, it's a generic pine tree.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of times you get them mixed up with the Austrian black pine, as I said earlier. Austrian black pine, take it or leave it. When that review comes, sorry to say, it's going to be like a 5.
Wow.
This one, though.
Little teaser.
It's a little teaser. When that one comes down the pike, sorry, everybody.
We can't cover it now.
Yeah, no, now it's done.
That was the review.
Yeah, you're going to be doing 2 tree reviews out of this. Anyway, that's what I say, Alex. 7.1, okay. I think it's a great tree. It's beautiful in and of its own right, and if being manipulated by humans.
7.1 golden cones of honor for the Japanese black pine from dendrologist Casey Clapp.
There you are.
Casey, here is my philosophical question.
Ooh.
Re-bonsai.
All right.
Is it tacky?
Oh.
I probably just offended some people.
No.
And I'm sorry, but this is how I feel.
That's fair.
To me, bonsai...
Is it tacky?
Seems a little tacky.
Seems like so you see it and you're like, you're trying a little too hard.
It's like people who are really into dollhouses and like put like electrical wiring in their dollhouses, have little light switches that turn on the hot tub. And a little real fireplace.
Yeah, with actual fire.
And they're really, really into it, and they think it's awesome. Okay. And I'm like, nice. It's a little tacky.
It's a little much.
I think it's a little tacky.
Interesting.
Forgive me.
Bonsai's a little tacky. We have to take a drive, Alex. Put a pause on.
Are we going to the nursery?
Yeah, no, we're going to go drive up. There's a whole bonsai museum or display garden outside Tacoma, Washington.
All right.
Yeah.
Sure, maybe I'm uncultured. Maybe I just need to have my eyes open a little bit. I drink Folgers until this year, you know, so I'm not exactly like well-rounded culturally.
You're getting...
So that's how I feel about bonsai.
I really appreciate that as a description. Like, hold on. Caveat, I used to drink Folgers until this year.
Yeah.
So everything I say, take it with a grain of coffee.
But I'm also open-minded.
That's true.
So I could see a bonsai. I will have no problem changing my opinion if I love it.
Okay, that's all right.
So Japanese black pine, the subject of today's episode.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty cool tree, Casey.
Okay, you think the tree's cool, the style that it is famous for.
Maybe not so
a little tacky. Okay.
You know how I like the Japanese, because you described the Japanese black pine as being really tough, will grow fucking anywhere. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've seen some like on the side, like under, like by an overpass, like the freeway, you know? And I have an analogy for this. You know, in Kill Bill?
Yeah.
I think part 2?
Yeah.
When the bride, Beatrix Kiddo, played by Uma Thurman,
spectacular,
goes to Tokyo.
Yeah.
To find Hattori Hanzo, master katana smith.
Yep.
And he's like working in a sushi restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little, that reminds me of the Japanese, you could come across a Japanese black pine and be like, oh, it's by an overpass.
Yeah.
And then you find out that it's the king of bonsai.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's impressive. You don't even look it.
Yes. You know what else is good? So speaking of that specific Quentin Tarantino movie series, it takes place, it has a lot of Japanese sort of imagery and culture in it.
Yeah.
Whenever you watch like a kabuki theater or something like that, like if there's a single tree growing in a background of something, that's a Japanese black pine.
Wow.
It is the cultural king of Japanese culture.
Very emblematic.
Yeah, very emblematic. So you're spot on.
There you go. Love the cone. That I'm a big cone fan. Yeah. I love this Japanese black pine cone.
Mm-hmm.
I stand by the fact that I think the side of it looks like walnuts. Boy, oh boy, I think it's going to get, you know, I'm not going to hold bonsai against it. That's a human creation.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
This thing's getting its 7.7 7.
It's a high rating.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for us.
Yeah. Good for the Japanese black pine and good for us.
Yeah.
A strong start to the unseason, I would say.
I agree. We should start doing some trees. We should just go through and like pick X amount of trees from like a list randomly so that we can try to like get some trees. We're like, oh yeah, we're going to cover this tree. We got nothing to say about it. This podcast is just going to be like a quick succession where you give a bunch of bad reviews. Everything's been like 7s and 8s.
Yeah.
We're a boring show.
Sounds like a good segment.
Some drama in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, that? 5.
I think that's plant rant.
Yeah,
right there.
That is. That's plant rant. You're right. We got to get there. Okay, cool.
Casey, that was our review of the Japanese black pine.
Feels good to be back.
It sure does.
7.1, 7.7.
Pretty good.
Beautiful tree.
It's time for a segment, Casey.
Whoa.
One that that you and I like a lot.
Oh.
I can't speak for the listeners. It's Who Can It Tree Now? 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 Who can it tree now?
Am I excited?
All right, Case. This is Who Can It Tree Now? I will choose a tree from David Allen Sibley's Guide to Trees.
Oh, thank God.
I have chosen a tree from this catalog of North American trees. You have 10 questions, yes or no questions, to ask me about this tree. The information, the answer to that question must be on the page for this tree, or you lose the question and it's a pass.
Okay.
At the end of the 10 questions, you may guess Who Can It Tree Now? Okay, Casey, please remove your headphones and plug them ears. La, 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 today's tree is the desert ironwood. Okay, Case.
All right, I'm here.
Whew, okay. You have 10 questions about this tree. Who can it tree now?
Is this tree a conifer? This also be yes or no questions, right?
No.
Okay, it is not a conifer.
It is not a conifer.
Is what? That was not my second question. It's all right.
No, I understand. I should ask
the same question twice. Okay, now question does two. This tree have cones? Is that what you're going to say? Okay, all right. So it's not that. Okay, does this tree have oppositely arranged leaves?
It does.
This is excellent news. Oh my God. Okay. All right. Are these leaves? Go ahead.
I just want to say.
Yeah.
I do my best. I have some illustrations here.
Yeah.
And I have a pretty limited tree knowledge, but it has been a year of me learning things about trees.
Of course.
So I'm answering all these to the best of my knowledge.
You're doing excellent.
Okay.
You can also I think that question is on there where it would say in the description somewhere. Leaves are opposite, I think.
It doesn't say that, but I believe they're oppositely arranged.
All right, perfect. That's two. Number three, are the leaves compound?
Remind me, I know this term, but what does it mean for a leaf to be compound?
For those of you who are just joining us, a compound leaf is a leaf that is that has more than one leaflet on it.
So yes.
Where the leaf blade, which is the sort of green part of the leaf, splits into more than one. A pinnately compound leaf is like a feather. One central rachis with little two leaflets coming off. Then there's palmately compound leaves where the leaflets start from a single point, kind of like the palm of your hand starts at the wrist.
Casey, this is a compound leaf.
Oh boy. Okay, so it is alternate compound.
That's right.
Is this tree in the genus Fraxinus?
It is not in the genus Fraxinus.
It is not.
And what does that genus mean?
Ash.
It is not in the genus Fraxinus.
It's opposite. That was my fourth question.
It's opposite.
Okay, I've had 4 questions?
Yeah.
Opposite, compound, however, it is not ash. Okay, so the question then would be, Is it pinnately compound?
It is pinnately compound.
Okay. But it's not ash.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Okay, this is great. We're having a good time. That's 5 question. Okay, Alex, I'm stressing now because that's my go-to.
Oh, boy.
Okay, is this in the genus Acer?
It is not.
It is not. That's six questions, Alex.
You can I'm hosed. Can I give a hint? Not a hint, but a suggestion?
Yes.
No, I'm not going to.
Oh, come on.
The way you reacted, I don't want to.
Shoot, it's because I was like, is this legal? Is this good? Should I allow this or will it ruin the whole thing?
I would say you can ask questions about where it grows.
Yeah, okay. It's true. I want, can you add, I know that the people at home are doing this, but I want to hear like the suspense where like you ask a question and when the answer comes, everyone's like, I will say
there are lots of types of questions you're not asking that I personally would ask, but I'm not the tree expert.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. All right. So this is this tree native to North America?
It is.
It is. That's seven questions. I have three more. It's native. It is opposite. It is pinnately compound. This is a hard one, Alex.
And it's not a conifer.
It is a broadleaf tree.
It is.
Okay. So is this a tall tree, as in like it grows over, let's say, 40 or 50 feet?
It is not.
It is a little tree. It's a little tree. A little alternately or oppositely arranged.
I'll give you this.
Okay.
In the description for this tree, it says shrub or small tree.
Aha. Okay. Does this plant tree have large, does it have showy white flowers?
I would not say.
Maybe, kind of.
I'm going to say no.
Shoot. Okay, I'm going to have to go into negative for this because I'm going to
shoot. Are we at 10 questions?
This is my 10th question.
Do you want to take a guess and and then we can continue asking questions for negative 1 point each?
I'm curious. Now that we're, really making sure this game is foolproof, if I ask one more question, do I then get to guess what it is? Or do I have to guess on my 10th question?
You get to ask a 10th question and then you get to guess. Okay. The guess is not one of the questions.
Gotcha. All right. I have one more question then and I'm going to come up with it. It's native to, is it native to the southeastern United States?
It is not.
It is not. Wow.
Oh, wow. The heat is on.
Okay. It's not native to the southeastern.
Interesting thing I just said. The heat is on.
Yeah. So it's a hot tree. Maybe it's from the desert. Is what I'm guessing.
Huh?
Huh. So if it's native to the southwest, it's a tree slash shrub, pinnately compound. I wonder if it's bipinnately compound. But I'm just wondering. I'm not asking.
Sure.
But the problem is the trees that I'm thinking of are alternately arranged, which would make one of your questions incorrect. One of your answers.
Can I clarify something?
You may.
The leaflets are oppositely arranged.
What about the leaves, Alex? Oh my God. Oops.
I'm now seeing Casey. I'm just here. Hold on. Yep. Okay.
Just getting confirmation.
The leaves are alternately arranged.
Oh my God.
But the leaflets are oppositely arranged.
Yeah, Alex. Okay.
I'm so sorry,
That's
Casey.
Okay. Can we go back to
No.
Just a couple things. Uh-huh. I'm gonna count the questions I want to revoke, which I would have not asked explicitly.
Okay. That's fine.
Is it in the genus Fraxinus?
No.
I would not have asked that question. So I see. That
okay,
question
yeah,
back,
okay. So you get one question back.
Yeah, I also would not have asked about the flowers.
Boy. This is just a mess.
Yeah, I'm just counting back. Okay.
Two questions back.
And then I think that would be about it.
Okay.
So let's just go with those two.
You have two more questions.
Is the fruit a nut?
Well, I don't think so.
Okay. It's not a nut.
No.
Okay. Does it have any, it's not a nut like thing. Okay. Is the fruit a long pendulous-like thing, kind of like a pea?
Casey, yes.
Wow.
The fruit is a pod.
Holy heck. Okay, it's a shrub or small tree.
That is correct.
Okay.
So you have one more question?
No, that
or
was
you
the
you have to guess now.
Now I have to guess. I guess that this tree is, unfortunately, I can't think any closer than this, some kind of mesquite.
No.
Alex, I got it wrong. I just can't believe it. Okay, so what else is there? If it's not that, if it would be a small shrub, kind of tree thing, they have a lot of ones that grow like that in that sort of area. If it would be a mesquite, the other one is an acacia.
It is not an acacia.
It's not an acacia.
Casey.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
I'm stumped.
I'm ending the game.
You have to.
You have lost Who Can It Tree now. It's a sad day.
What is this? Of course, this is the worst day.
Olnea tessota. This is a desert ironwood.
A desert ironwood. Wow. You know
what?
Are
you familiar with this tree?
I am completely unfamiliar with this tree.
That's too bad. Casey, I'm so sorry.
Alex, that's okay. You know, you can't win them all. Everyone's
you can't win them all.
Please,
you did the best you could.
Please don't unfollow the podcast, people. I know I've lost all my credibility now.
I guess this is as good a time as any to announce my resignation from Completely Arbitrary.
Mine too. We're going to have dead air for the next season.
The unseason indeed.
The unseason. Oh, man.
Casey, it's time for a Completely Arbitrary Q&A. Today's question is from Jill Daniels.
What a fun way to start.
Jill says, hi, Alex and Casey. Hi, Jill.
What up, Jill?
I'm catching up on some episodes, so apologies if you've already covered this, but,
sounds
well,
good
news for Jill. We cover things many times before.
Lots of times.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on these devices that allow plants and their fungal associates to channel their energy to create music? If you were determined family tree, if you were your determined family trees, what planty noises would you make?
What planty noises would I make?
Thank you from an aspiring plant toxicologist.
Hey,
Jill,
all right.
Thanks, Jill, for your question.
You know some toxicologists.
I don't even know what that is, but it sounds cool.
I don't know what this music and fungal associate music thing is she's talking about.
Okay, Casey, we're going to take a very short break. I'm going to show Casey this video, and we'll be right back. Casey.
That was a little much. I have to say.
Casey just discovered a new color that he doesn't know how to process.
It's true. I feel like they're saying things to me.
So Plant Wave is the brand name of this little synthesizer thing that this is on their How It Works page on their website.
Yeah.
It detects slight electrical variations in a plant via two electrodes placed on the leaves. These variations are graphed as a wave, which is translated into pitch messages that play musical instruments designed by their team.
Yeah.
Other characteristics of the wave change the textural qualities of those sounds. The result is a continuous stream of pleasing music that gives you a sonic window into the secret life of plants. Casey, I think it's a little... I think they're extrapolating a little bit.
A little bit. But, Alex...
But it is nice.
I love that you said extrapolating a little bit.
Uh-huh.
It's a perfect way to describe it. I got some fun things about this.
Okay.
There's a book that I read many years ago that this immediately reminded me of.
Wow.
And literally, read that last sentence again.
Okay. The result is a continuous stream of pleasing music that gives you a sonic window into the secret life of plants.
Now, Google the secret life of plants. What do you find?
I find a book.
Yes. What's that book called?
The Secret Life of Plants by Peter Tompkins.
That is it, and Christopher Bird.
Okay.
Now, this book is about these same techniques that they're using on this, what was the name of this
plant
product? Plant Wave. It's the same exact technique. Essentially, take diodes, put it on to a plant, and then what they did is instead of using a, basically transforming a very small electrical signal, which electricity goes through things, like trees get struck by lightning all the time because of water conducts electricity. Therefore, you can get a slight electrical continuum through these diodes that you put on, because if there is a little bit that can go through the leaves plant or the leaves cells through the water, through the veins and vessels up to this other leaf and then go out the other node, you get the tiniest little like thing that happens. So what they did is these experiments at the Secret Life of Plants, and this mm-hmm. book was written in 1973. This entire thing basically said plants are sentient. And they know things, they can remember things, and they are not just like living, sitting there. Like you can detect plants crying. You can detect them having any amount of pain or suffering or have a visceral reaction to you. And they did all sorts of funny things. I don't think I have this book anymore, and I don't know what I did with it.
Wow.
I know I don't because I just moved. I looked through all my books. I would love to still have this book.
Wow.
I might just go out and buy one because I love it. The entire point of what they did is they took these same diodes that was on this this machine,
mm-hmm.
and instead of putting those through a little synthesizer like what they're doing here, they put them into a polygraph machine, like the same lie detector kind of test thing. And then they would do things to the plants and see how the plants responded. You know, the classic lie detector where, you know, if you're lying, you're nervous and you get like this certain physiological uh-huh. reaction, then that you can see that measurement
right.
in these changes. Horribly unscientific. Like,
yeah, lie detectors suck.
Yeah, they're just the worst things. But they did the same thing, and it was so interesting because they would literally say, like, they'd put a bunch of plants and they'd run these experiments where they would have like all the same plants, like in terms of species, mm-hmm. these potted plants in a room. They'd walk in and they say they had two plants. They'd walk in, have some random person, just officer, say, hey, can we get you in here real fast? They'd come in, they'd say, pick a plant, doesn't matter which one, just only one of them, throw it on the ground, destroy it, step on it, like absolutely obliterate that plant. And just come back out, let us know when you're done. And then the guy would come back out and then they would take that plant, they'd put it into a room with other plants that are the same, like you wouldn't be able to tell them apart. And they would measure each one of the plants with a polygraph machine. And they'd say, okay, guy, go walk up to plant number one. Okay, thank you. Go walk up to plant number two. And they'd measure if the plant had any reaction to this person walking up. And then they claim when the person walked up to the plant that witnessed that person destroying that other plant, that the plant had this like polygraph machine reaction. They said, yes, based on this, this plant could not only tell that this person messed up that other plant, when he left the room and then came back, the plant recognized that that person is the thing that destroyed the other plant that it was right next to, that it, quote, witnessed.
I just hurt my eyes from rolling them so hard.
It's so good, though, isn't it?
I don't know.
It was all stuff like that. Like I said, I wish I had this book because I would go home and read it immediately and we'd do an entire episode on it.
Let's do it.
I'll order it right now. The thing with it, though, is that... So, first off, I'm going to answer Jill's question. Thank you, Jill. I love these machines. As Alex so succinctly put today, I think they're a little bit tacky. If you can get any amount of electrical current from anything... then it's just a kind of a silly way to get an electrical current. You put it on, you know, your pinky finger and your thumb, and then you see what sine waves come out of it. Cool. That sounds great. I like it. I think it's fun. I like the color, and I love the innovation. But it's kind of like someone took a ring of a tree, and they, like, played it as if it was a record, and they just took the record machine and put it right between a ring, which is essentially the darkest, like, later growth of a tree. It's not even a technical ring. It's just a higher concentration of little things. So they put it on there, and then they, like, press play, and you heard, like, this, ooh,
right.
And then there was, like, a knot or something, and every time I hit the knot, it was like, goo,
yeah,
goo. And it was just like, you listen to it once, and you're like, okay, the fourth time, it should change. And then it didn't, and you're just like, oh my God, I hate this. Like, you just play, it's just like a record on repeat. It's a great idea. It has this like really cool artistic quality to it, where someone's like, I'm trying to think outside the box. How can I represent the electricity that's running through a plant? Cool, you did it. You did it in this cool way. I think that's nice. Although I do find it a little tagging.
Yeah. I think I agree with you, Case. I think
I'm too much of a realist, maybe?
It's like it was definitely, it reminds me of something that was definitely made by tech people, not by like botanical people.
Yes, yeah.
It's also $300.
Hey, I guess, if you could take that little synthesizer and then attach it to something else and make some cool music with it. If this is like the Korg plant speak thing, that'd be awesome.
I just see it as like completely unnecessary, and like they might be kind of preying on a certain community.
Yeah, who's just like, oh, I want to hear this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you do it once and then that's it.
You can imagine somebody like plugging it into their houseplants and like they just start crying.
Oh, yeah. They're just the saddest thing.
Maybe I'm being a little cynical.
Maybe,
but,
I don't know.
Yeah, thank you for your question, Jill.
Yeah, great one. Go look up The Secret Life of Plants by Peter Tomkin. Bring that thing back because I think it would be good.
Yeah, and then check out Plant Wave and let us know in the comments of this Instagram post what you
sounds
think of
like.
It.
Yeah, and put it onto your plants and tell us what they sound like.
Casey. Oh,
yes, Alex.
We've done it again, my friend.
We've found another way to bring pseudoscience into our podcast.
This has been episode one. I'm not even going to call it episode one. I'm just going to call it the first step.
Yeah, episode.
The first stepping stone in the bonsai nursery.
Oh my gosh. You know, they zigzag them so that spirits can't follow you down a straight line. How about that? There you go.
Well, on that
we're going to zigzag our episodes here.
Case... Here's to I would toast another shot of syrup, but I think I might vomit.
Yeah, that's fair.
Here's to year two.
Year two.
The unseasoned.
Everyone, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody. See ya. Bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.